This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning and thanks for staying with us on BFM 89.9. I'm Koo Soo Chong with Noel Lim and Shazana Mokhtar. Now we move on to our discussion on a special purpose acquisition company or SPAC. These listings have been experiencing a boom, especially in the US, since the start of the pandemic, Shaz.
That's right. In just the first quarter of this year, proceeds from US SPAC listings have already surpassed the total amount raised last year. Now SPACs, also known as blank check companies, they're not new. They've been around since the 1990s. And did you know, maybe not many of you know, but Malaysia did have a head start with Hibiscus Petroleum Berhad in 2011. We haven't had a SPAC listing since 2015, though. And now Singapore is also getting into the act. Earlier this month, the city-state stock exchange said it will allow SPAC listings subject to a minimum market cap of around $220 million in an effort to boost its IPO market.
And really why we are talking about this, apart from Singapore, Indonesia and Hong Kong are also considering SPAC listings, but more importantly, in the recently launched Capital Market Master Plan 3 yesterday, the SEC said it is looking into revamping its SPAC framework. I think really the question is what changes that are needed and whether, you know, we provide the right market conditions for more SPACs.
Okay, so for some much needed perspective, we are now talking to the financial market columnist, Pankaj Kumar. Pankaj, good morning. Now, yesterday the SEC announced under their Capital Master Market Plan that they were going to be reviewing the SPAC framework. As we know, we've had these SPACs before in Malaysia. What should be changed under this framework, do you think?
Thanks, Chuang, for having me. Good morning, all. I think there are a few issues regarding SPAC that were listed in Malaysia. And chief among them is actually about arbitrage opportunity that exists between, especially based on the fact that dissenting shareholders are actually entitled to receive cash payout equivalent to cash held in the trust account. And so hence, while a SPAC requires at least 75% of shareholders in value voting for an acquisition, the dissenting shareholders may have other agenda due to the arbitrage opportunity that exists. And of course, I think the other thing that the SPAC, this is a universal thing actually, because whenever a SPAC raises funds from the market through a listing, everybody knows what is the amount of money that the SPAC has that it can be used for acquisition. And the rule basically says that your qualifying asset must have a value equivalent to 80% of, the 90% of the amount that was raised. So effectively, everybody knows how much money is there. And sometimes sellers of businesses and, wanting to inject into SPAC, what happens here is that valuation becomes tricky, because everybody is asking sky high price. So I think I remember years back when Reed Sena was one of them who was looking for an asset, they couldn't find one because everybody was looking for like 25, 30 times multiple, So they found that it was too high to pay in that sense. So end up, they have to liquidate. They couldn't really obtain a qualifying asset.
Yeah, so only Hibiscus was really a success, right? Is it possible to avoid the problems that you spoke about, or are SPACs really just fundamentally set up to fail, actually?
Well, actually, it all really depends on the rules of the game, and I think it's not just Hibiscus that was successful. Actually, there was another one called Reach Energy. So out of the five, as you rightly pointed out, we had two success, three failures. So 40% success rate is definitely not a success. So to me, we need to change some of the rules that we have, especially in relation to two things. One is actually the requirement that shareholder approval you require at 75%. To me, I think this is quite stringent. So what you should do is to lower down the requirement, the threshold to perhaps majority. Let's say 50% plus one share. And so as long as you get 50% plus one share, a SPAC should be allowed to continue to acquire an asset. Investors will come for the EGM for approval and all that.
Pankaj, we see that Singapore Exchange has introduced its own framework for SPACs. What do you make of that framework? Do you think it'll revitalize their IPO market?
I think Singapore, taking the cue from the US and of course other global markets, you have seen SPAC has become the new darling of markets. In fact, was looking at data, this year alone, we already seen $133 billion being raised globally. But for Singapore, I think it will still take time. Yeah, I mean, they just came out with their rules and all that. And while the current framework has loosened some of the earlier tighter regulatory guidance, for example, on the size of SPACs as well as the de-SPAC rule, it's a question of appetite of investors to embrace SPACs into their portfolio and their understanding of the business model of companies being injected into a SPAC. Well, Singapore, as you know, they are quite well positioned themselves as far as REITs are concerned. It's rather different as the objective is about, you know, when you buy yield REITs, your objective is actually more driven by yield. And most investors, Asian investors, understand properties rather well. Yeah, for SPAC, it's actually really different, yeah? Because the type of company that's being injected into a blank check IPO can be anything. And of course, target here is of course related to technology sector. And hence, it's difficult to gauge until information is available publicly.
Yeah, yeah. Pankaj, so obviously in America, which is the most developed SPAC framework in the world, it's not a new phenomenon. It's been around for quite a long time, actually.
Yeah.
And not much by way of shareholder value, but they've become, you know, until recently, they were very hot, you know, led by names like Bill Pershing and Chamath Palihapitiya, people like that, right? And of course, people like Grab and all that are also considering listings via SPACs. That, you know, that aura seems to have dwindled a lot in the recent few weeks. Why has that happened, and what can we take away from that particular phenomenon?
Well, I think it's a very good question, because I think I look at it, it's like it's dying of natural death.
Yeah.
And at the same time, like, there were just too many specs. Yeah. So it's a question like demand and supply. When you have too many specs, where is the qualifying assets going to come from? Yeah. Yes, we have a lot of startups globally. Yeah. But not many of them are taking the route, the spec route to get listed. Yeah, some of them are happy to be in private hands until they reach a certain scale, yeah, before they actually go public. So perhaps maybe the universe of companies wanting to get listed via SPAC is actually not really there. Yeah, so I think that's the take that I take from the lack of interest now.
Yeah, so this thing about investor appetite. So back in Malaysia, do you think retail and as well as our local institutional investors, do you think they would consider SPAC seriously after, you know, the kind of process that we went through earlier?
Yeah, I think there is Malaysian market, if you look at SPAC, we only had five. But I think the rules are the one that really will either attract investors to go into it or, you know, perhaps adopt a wait-and-see attitude. I think this rule about the 75% requirement that you need shareholders' approval, I think that needs to be addressed. And the other thing is that how do you take away the arbitrage opportunity that exists? Yeah? I saw this, I think, in one of those SPAC, where because of the arbitrage opportunity that exists, and in fact, some of these foreign funds, investors, became majority shareholders of the SPACs because they know it's a given amount that they can make. Yeah, let's say a SPAC has a share price of 40 cents or 42 cents, but you know the amount of cash that he has is equivalent to 50 cents. Yeah, so if you don't approve the transaction, you know you can get back your cash. Yeah, which has got that 8 cents gain. Yeah, that's already 20%. Yeah, or even if the qualifying asset is approved, you can also dissent. Yeah, where you can say that, oh, I'm dissenting, you know, so you can get back your cash.
Yeah.
So these are the issues that need to be addressed.
Yeah, Pankaj, just in terms of why SPACs are being, you know, reintroduced or re-looked at, obviously it's about galvanizing the local capital market. I want to ask you, since you're on the line, I want to ask you your gut reaction to possible news that we could have a capital gains tax on share profits as reported by the newspapers this morning. If that does happen, you know, what kind of impact you're going to have on the financial on the local capital markets?
Well, on the question of capital gains tax, I differ. I have a differing opinion. To me, I think we shouldn't tax investors who are, you know, investors in the market for capital gains. But what we should tax is really when companies actually sell their businesses. I mean, yeah. For example, if you look at a recent transaction when IGM sold IGM Plantations to KLK, they made a profit of $700 million. That 700 million profit is clean. There's no tax to it. So that's actually a capital gain, right? You should tax those things. Yeah, not taxing individual investors who are trading in the market, you know, or who are long-term investors who buy shares for dividend purposes, you know, and suddenly or one day the share price is appreciated to a certain level where they think it's good to take profit and then you go and tax them. That's not fair. Okay. So I think you should look at things, you know, more objectively.
Okay, well, Pankaj, thanks as always. Your views are very eloquent as always. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.